Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to the Coach and Coordinator Podcast. We turn to the defensive side of the ball today, and joining me as our guest on the podcast is the defensive coordinator at Frostburg State, Coach John Kelling. Coach Kelling, it's great to have you here today.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Keith. And we're looking forward to this.
Coach, we're going to get into some of the defense and some of the things you guys do. And you guys have had a tremendous 2018 season and the top 25 statistically in several categories. Before we get into that, Coach, help us understand a little bit about your start in coaching and what was it that really drew you to this profession?
I always say God's got a better plan than I ever did, and it certainly worked out that way for me. When I got done playing, I played at Minnesota State Mankato. Had a real successful career there, had a lot of fun doing there. Ended up getting the invite to the combine. So I'm thinking NFL dreams. I got all these wonderful things planned, thinking of this is where my life's going to lead. And then they find out, nope, that's not going to be the case. So again, there's a little medical issues, and therefore nothing major that I can't deal with, but there were some medical issues that they didn't want to work through. And therefore, what ended up happening, next thing you know, I got to find some, now I got to redirect my life. Now that dream that was there isn't happening. So now I got to find something else. And what I ended up doing, Coach Runk was my head coach at that time. And he said, why don't you come out and continue to help coach? And it was a blessing in disguise. I knew I was kind of wanting to be a teacher of something through that time frame. And I ended up helping student assist and go through the graduate program. And next thing you know, one job led to another here, back and forth. And wow, what do you know? All of a sudden, this is 25 plus years of me coaching. So it's just amazing how, certain things, God's plan, like I always say, God's plans are better than my plans. So whatever he has still in store for me, I'm up for that challenge. But yeah, it's been a lot of fun in terms of the journey and in terms of the things and the people and the lessons that I've learned. Just been tremendous.
Coach, you've made several stops along the way in Division I and Division II programs. As you grew as a coach, what are some of those important lessons you learned that really stuck with you and really developed into part of what you do all the time now?
I think a couple simple items have always stuck with me. One of the first ones, that I ever learned was, I'm sitting here and going through and I'm giving a speech on linebacker play. And this is actually, long story short, it's over in Sweden. And so we're talking and we're talking to a bunch of Swedish coaches over there. And with this, and I've got some guys in the room that I'm just like, oh my goodness, are you kidding me? Why are these people taking notes on what I'm speaking? I've been coaching for like 2 years. He's got like 25 years of experience. He's like world renowned coordinator. What in the world is he taking notes? So I went in and asked him. I was like, hey, what in the world were you doing that thing? He told me a very important lesson at that particular time. He said, John, don't ever forget, wherever you go, wherever you be, make sure that you're always learning. And wherever you're going, you can always get something. And don't forget that. So I've taken that motto everywhere that I've gone, everywhere that I've been, and everywhere I try to teach all my assistants. Guys, there's thousands of different ways to do things in football. With that, make sure that you're always learning. Make sure you're always finding something out. Second thing that I've always learned and I've always stuck with is you always want to make sure that you surround yourself with good people. Make sure that the people that are around you are good people that you can enjoy doing what you do. football's not an easy business. My wife, God bless her, she can attest to that. My kids, you know, they know, hey, Dad's going to be gone recruiting for the next 2 weeks. You're not going to see him. You know, there are sacrifices that we all make and things that we all do, but it's for the love of the game. And with that, if you're not surrounding yourself with good people, it becomes a challenge. I know some guys are challenged because they're like, well, I don't have a job now or don't have this, but hey, I understand, but keep searching for that right job. Keep looking for it. Don't necessarily go for, hey, you got to be the coordinator, have to be the, you know, this person or the head coach or this or that. Hey, just make sure that you're happy. Make sure you got good people around you. And trust me, good things will end up happening and you'll be happier for it. So being able to constantly learn and surround yourself with good people, two most important things I've ever learned in this business.
Coach, you seem to be enjoying yourself now just as we warmed up for this, that, you know, it's a time of the year. You're excited to get back to ball and get ready for spring ball. As you're starting to put together everything for 2019, what are some of the things that you focus on first in building your defensive unit? Because I think you would agree, like every year, it's going to be different. There's turnover in your personnel. In some ways, while the schemes may remain the same and some of the philosophies, there's going to be some changes. There's going to be new things. So how do you start to develop this 2019 defense?
Well, the very first thing you got to do is take a look at, hey, who do you think you're going to have back, or who is going to be the majority of the people that you have back? What are some of the strengths that they have? What are some of the weaknesses that they have? What can we exploit? What can we take advantage of? How can we isolate some people to really allow their skill set to go? And then, and with that, it still has to remain, like you kind of said, it still has to remain in the core values that you still bring as a defense. I mean, some of the simple core values we have, you know, we're going to attack. We're going to go after you. We're not going to sit around and wait. You know, we're going to try to dictate to you what plays you're going to run, et cetera, et cetera. Those core values still are not going to change, but how are we going to look when we do it? You're going to be probably a little bit different. You know, I was like, I can use this last year as a perfect example. Very proud of the group of young men this last year. I mean, we brought back from the year before, we brought back one linebacker, one linebacker who was out for because of injury, so I wasn't sure what I was going to get him. And then we brought back a nose guard. And everybody else, rather green. They were rather green as they go. And the big thing for us was, hey, we have to do something different. We're not the same defense. I lost the Nile Scott to the NFL. I lost a Josh Washington, you know, who had been a three-time all-conference player for me. I'd lost all those guys. We had to replace them all. Well, we found out some things that we could do well. And again, the great part for us is we didn't change our core values. The guys believed and understood what those core values are, but we just looked a lot differently than this year than we did the previous year. Well, the good part was, you know, the guys bought into that and were very successful. And I was very proud of them this year. So, again, you got to kind of find that, find out what they can do within your core philosophy, and then you try to build around that.
Coach, taking a step back and looking at the bigger picture of what you're building these guys into, I think everybody owns a different part of the culture, and certainly all those different units need to be aligned. But when you're looking at your defense, what are some of the hallmarks of your defense as far as the culture and the things that we're going to see from them?
You know, a couple things. One, I always want them to be, try to remain humble, try to be real positive about things. Those are two of the hallmarks that we always want our guys to be a part of. The being humble, I think, is one of the big reasons why we're able to be successful, because guys are willing to throw their bodies around and take out different blockers just so they can see their teammate be successful. They take as much pride and joy of watching others be successful as they do seeing themselves be successful. Easy for me to say. But that's one of the big things is you know, working on that end of it. The second thing we really focus on is trying to be positive. We really try to focus on making sure every single day that somehow, some way, we're trying to lift each other up, that we're not trying to tear each other down, that we are constantly trying to build and build higher, and to make sure that we don't have a lot of those scuffles. The third major issue is the communication. I truly believe that's one of the big issues. The communication needs to happen because, let's face it, we got, you know, 50, 60 guys on defense, and with that, well, not everyone gels all the time. There's conflicts. There are things that go on. There are bad jokes that are told in the locker room that somebody took the wrong way, or, you know, a whole count of different items that could happen. But with that, what we try to do is make sure that the communication process is there so that they are able to work it out, to deal with those issues. And then the last part with that communication is even simple things. When we're standing on the sidelines, I don't want knees on their, you know, hands on their knees. I don't want them to look like they're beat. I want to make sure body language and everything that they are presenting is that, hey, we are confident, we're ready to go, and we're going to battle you to the end. Those are body language issues that we try to work hard through. So there's, like you said, this off season, it's always a challenge at this time of year because of the time constraints and other things that you get to do in D3 or don't get to do in D3. But with that, some of the items that you constantly are working on with these young men is trying to build their character and build them up those items. So that when you get to the X's and O's of being aggressive, going after people, dictating, and all those, they just come second nature. That's really what we've been focusing on now.
Coach, when you look at spring ball in D3, you don't get to wear anything, right? You're out there in shorts and t-shirts. You can use some shields now. We didn't used to be able to do that. But I found as I started to get used to, it's probably my second year of D3 spring ball, I learned really a different way to coach things, still be out there, still being able to play fast, and kind of focusing on the fundamental movements, the skills you need. I mean, because we are at a time, we hear it all the time, like, you got to keep the head out of the game. So I think a lot of what we do actually promotes that. We can't stick our faces in there. We have nothing protecting it, no helmet. But yet when I look at our practices, I go out to other D3 practices, I'm sure you've found it the same, that there's so much you can do without that full go contact.
Yes, it's important nowadays. And, you know, give credit where credit's due, at least to me. The Seattle Seahawks have done a nice job of kind of taking the lead on this, of keeping your head out and doing all the rugby stuff, tackling, et cetera, et cetera. We're a huge believer in that. That's one of the big things that we try to do. And spring ball is where we spend a lot of time doing it. We learn how to practice, how you can go fast, how you get to practice fast, how do you get yourself in body positions where you're able to keep your head up, see what you're supposed to do. And we just call it pin the hip tempo. I mean, we are flying by the guys and running by them and just being able to tag off. And the great part for us is it's easy for us to coach. You can see if the guy's leaning. You can see if the guy's in good athletic position. You can see if the guy's taking a poor angle or wrong angle. And so many of those items, you know, Keith, are so important now that you get those things corrected here. So that when you put the pads on and the physicality comes into play, whether you need to get off a block or whether you need to actually finish the tackle and do the little items, that your base, your foundation is solid and it's already there. And spring ball is where you teach it. Mm-hmm. You don't have enough hours. NCAA has put a number of, you know, your limit on practices with fall camp. So there's not a lot of time between then and the first game. You've got to get a lot accomplished between those times. So from that standpoint, your fundamentals, your base, your foundation, like you said, hey, that's where it needs to be established. And we get done a lot. I love spring ball on that end. I know the guys don't, because sometimes they may think it's track practice because we're doing a lot of sprinting and a lot of running. But from my standpoint, it's really easy to be able to define and say, hey, you know, Joey, you're not doing things well. Your body is way out of control. See you staring at the ground. Look at you. You're lunging. You're leaning. That's never going to happen in a game. You're just going to miss it. Those types of items are big.
Coach, I'd like to get a little more detail on that pin the hip tempo, because, you know, it's something I think all D3s use. I think it's something very valuable as anybody's season goes on, regardless of the level, that you want to take some of the hits out, some of the contact out of practice. But I think guys sometimes misunderstand, especially players, what that is, where they're just tagging off on the hip, that there are some details of getting in the right position that you want to look for as a coach and you want to preach to these guys when you are running that kind of tempo. What are those for you?
For us, real simple. We call it, we got three different styles of tackles. I'll back up just a little bit to give this a little bit of a foundation, if you would. We call three different types of tackling. One, you know, profile tackle. Profile tackle means for us that you get to see both numbers. If you're able to see both numbers, we should take him up high. Well, obviously, we've got no pads. If the guy catches the ball and he turns straight at us, I don't want him tackling in the spring. But again, you should be able to see both. Your eyes should be up. You should never have anything down. And with it, as you go, you should actually have to scoot out of the way on any profile tackle during spring. You actually should be taking an angle, and on the last minute, we just call it a little scoot, where the guy just keeps running. He doesn't slow down. He doesn't stop. He just keeps going, and we just have to get out of the way. That's a profile tackle. Pin the hip, and with that, any sort of hawk tackle to us is we define it as you can see one number. If you can see one number, you should be hawk tackling. Hawk tackle for us, as you're running, you're on the backside shoulder. Your front side shoulder should be right through the armpit to the hip. And we really focus on those areas. We found that if you really focus on the hip too much, our heads go down. We found that we need to make sure that we have that eye level that's up just a little bit. So we're in there. And as we continue to go, one of the big things we're looking for, we are a team that does not want our guys to break down. The old traditional, you know, get your feet underneath you, your hips underneath you, and then be able to roll your hips. That's not what we are trying to teach. We are trying to teach drawing a straight line through that ball carrier right where he's at and delivering him 5 yards on that same angle down the field. And so what we're doing when we practice is that guy's running, you have to be in a position where you get close enough where you never stop down, never break down. And as you do this, what we try to teach our guys, we should be able to see your head up. And then if you would take your hands, point your fingers at the ceiling, then rotate them, where now the only thing that's there is your thumb, or your fingers are either down pointing at the ground or they're pointing to the side and your thumb's there. You have to have two hand touch on his hip as you run by him. Things for us, promotes eyes up. With that, good body position, because if you try to extend your arm, you'll find that you really can't extend it very far if your hand position is correct. So it has to be much closer. Therefore, you are much closer as we go, and it's able to then continue on. The one thing that we don't like is when guys slow down or stop. Now you get to watch their feet as well. You get to watch their body position. Are they out of control? Are they not going to be around? Hey, you should be able to accelerate right through. And then the third tackle that we utilize is the hawk and roll tackle. Obviously, we don't do that out there as well. But when we do pin the hip, that's the big thing that we're trying to do, is just run by fire. So it's really not much different than the hawk tackle when we practice it throughout spring. But when we get to live spots, then it's being able to execute the technique that we taught at the end. So we get a lot of tackling practice done in spring, tons. Every single time that the ball's complete, there needs to be somehow, I mean, unless the receiver just falls down or the running back just falls down, there's some critique from a coach going to those people in terms of, hey, you need to make sure that you're doing this. Or you need to do this. Great part for us when we practice, the guys never slow down. The offensive guys never slow down. So everybody else has got to continue to run. And we can get four or five, six different looks, hey, at people of how they were supposed to tackle, how they should have tackled, were they in good enough positions. So we get to teach six different people on one play, and that's huge to us. So even though it's Division III, non-pad, spring ball, hey, it may not have the physicality, but it certainly still has the teaching moments and the teaching positions that will pay big-time benefits, you know, come fall.
Absolutely. I know we used to use a tempo, and we did it in spring ball, and we would carry it into the season. We just, you know, I hate to say it, but from watching some of those Pro Bowl games from a few years ago where they were really not playing hard, we just called it Pro Bowl tempo, and it meant that, you know, for example, any ball in the air right away was to the offensive guys. So go get in position to make a play. Let's not get tangled up. But I think when you look at those things, especially in terms of the season, like for us, we would go to some of those tempos, especially as the week got on, you know, Thursdays for sure. We weren't going to do anything that put these guys in the way of harm and, you know, getting tangled up or, you know, getting their heads knocked around. I mean, they, you know, we want to keep them out of contact, and I think that's a great way to do it. And it's, like you said, spring ball is about learning to practice as well.
Yep, exactly. And it's not just about learning the X's, the O's. It's about learning tempos and techniques and learning how you're supposed to accomplish things. I mean, the honest God difference, the only difference between us and what we call pin the hip tempo, which pin the hip tempo is everybody's the only thing on those profile tackles, we scoot out of the way. The difference between that and FUD is on the profile tackles, we thud him up and then we let him go. Right. That's it. Mm-hmm. That's the only difference. You know, we still don't try to bring people down on the perimeter. We still are trying to run through people quickly, fast, and in good positions as we go on the perimeter. Now, live, you know, we don't do live very often as it goes after preseason, but, I mean, live is live.
Right.
We gotta, but we also allow our guys to then get cut at that particular time as well. Like when we used to play Salisbury, you know, that was always the time where we'd actually have one little period where we'd try to actually utilize some live looks because they were going to cut us. Mm-hmm. That's just the way it worked. And we needed those. We didn't see that a whole heck of a lot throughout the rest of the season. We needed some looks at it.
Absolutely. Coach, you guys have been able to be at the top of Division III here over the last couple seasons. And, you know, this past year, you guys were third in pass defense, fourth on third down, seventh overall in total D. Let's focus a little bit on those third downs. I think it's a critical part of the game. You need to get off the field, get your offense back out there. You guys, regular season, were 22.1%. Was the offense's conversion rate. When you look at third down, first of all, from a preparation standpoint, what things go into preparing for third down?
We basically break it down into, I don't think this is anything rocket science, but we do really break it down into short, medium, and long. And then we have a category of extra long as well. We really focus on all the plays that the opponents will have and the things that they do on a consistent basis. So when we look at a third down vehicle, if you would, and what we're trying to prepare for, we really focus on A, what have they shown that they like doing? Are there certain formations? Are there certain plays that they like doing? And then what we try to incorporate as well is a lot of what may be their favorite, you know, running play. Does it match up with some of those things, or is it just slightly different? And those are the things that we start focusing on then. Then we start taking away. It's our goal, number one, is to make you try to do something different. If you want to run outs, say on third and medium, we're probably going to play a coverage, or a blitz or do something that's going to make sure that you are not able to run those routes. You're going to have to run ins. You're going to have to run slants. You're going to have to do something different than what you are used to doing. And that's how we really kind of go about looking at third downs. The second thing is for us, that is Thursday's practice. Thursday's practice is all situational for us. Everything we do is third and medium, third and short, third and long, third and extra long, and then we situational red zone as well. So those items are what we really focus on Thursday, and our guys really zone in and tune in. It's been fun for, I think the guys been able to really make that transition very well. The first 2 days really focusing on first down and second down and really just zoning in on the game plan and all the different plays and motions and things that they can do there. And then relaxing on third down and knowing, hey, all right, here we go. Third down, time to get us off. And it's a really big emphasis point for all of us. When I got here, that was one of the big deals. It was, we were struggling a little bit the first couple of years that we were here on offense. And so we knew we had to get the ball back to them as many times as humanly possible, just to give ourselves a chance to stay in every ball game. Here this last year, we knew that because of our running game and the things that we were doing on offense and the big playability that we had, hey, the more times that we were able to get the ball back for our offense, the more times that we were going to be able to get scores on the board. And when we're playing from advantage of everything on the scoreboard, life becomes much easier for us, much simpler for us, and then we get to turn the guys loose a little bit more. And I think that's the last bit of it, is our guys really have taken that kind of mantra that, hey, we get them to third down, guess what? This is our down. This is our down. What we get to do what we want to do. I'm going to dictate to you what you got to do, and we're just going. And that could be third and short, or it could be third and 20. Just doesn't matter to the guys. So I'm really proud of that fact of it. But we do spend a lot of time on third downs in terms of focusing on the opponent, really trying to take away with what they want to try to accomplish, and then getting ourselves just a good comfort level of being aggressive with it.
Coach, in the larger perspective of the passing game, you guys, regular season, only allowed 111.8 yards per game, which was third in the country. From your defensive side of the ball, your philosophy on stopping the pass, how do you guys approach that as a whole? I know you talked about third down there and some of the things to make them play left-handed, mm-hmm. but being able to excel in the passing game like that, what's the focus?
Focus comes twofold. First thing, guys up front. We really focus our defensive front on attacking the quarterback. Our job is, even if we're not getting sacks, even if we're not truly getting hits on him, we need to be in his face and make him feel uncomfortable. That is our number one goal of our guys up front. And if they choose to run the ball, then we try to stop the run on our way back to the quarterback. It's always been our philosophy here. We're always going to, I'm proud of the fact that we've been, very highly ranked in terms of tackles for loss and sacks in the nation every year. A lot of it just goes back to our philosophy of our guys up front. We are going to pin our ears back and we're going to go. So that helps. Obviously, if the quarterback's running for his life the whole entire time, it makes playing pass coverage much easier. But the second thing that we try to do as a defense on pass coverage, we try to give very similar type looks and try to be very multiple within it. We probably go into every single game with at least 7 to 8 different coverages that we will utilize for this quarterback. We just find it necessary nowadays. The more that you just sit in one thing, more that the guys on the other side of the ball are going to get comfortable and be able to pick you apart. These quarterbacks are too good. They get too good at reads. just too many issues with that. The second thing is with all these RPOs and everything else that we have to face nowadays, you know, the more looks that we can give that quarterback, the more it becomes like a triple option. He has to read it correctly. He has to deliver the ball correct. If you thought we were going to be in a two deep and all of a sudden we're in a three deep, now it becomes on him to make the correct read, do everything right on the fly through it, and be accurate all at the same time. So we try to give quarterbacks as many looks as possible. So if you add the pressure of attacking, getting in his face, even though it may not be a sack, maybe a hit, maybe just uncomfortable for him, and then the rotating of seven different, eight different coverages, it really tries to put a lot of emphasis on making sure the quarterback has a good day. Because if he has a good day, he probably has some success. If he doesn't have a good day, it's going to be a long day for him. So,
well, I agree. Most offenses are definitely the quarterback centric in the run and pass game today, whether that's a guy who actually could get out there and run on the edge and have some planned runs, or that guy who is using the run pass option as part of his attack. I got a couple questions for you based on what you said. First of all, the RPOs, mm-hmm. Your guys, you coach the linebackers. They are certainly targets of the RPO. We want to make the level two guys wrong nowadays. How are you coaching your guys to be successful against the RPO?
Well, it really comes back to that's why we employ about 7 to 8 to even sometimes more different types of coverages, because within each different coverage, those guys and a little bit formationally as well, but within those coverages, those guys are going to be assigned to know, hey, do I play run first or do I play pass first? Do I have to sit back and play pass or do I have to play run? And that's the goal for us, is to make sure that we look the same every single time, but you don't know if this guy's going to play run or if he's going to actually drop back and play pass. We try to make things as simple as possible on that end. That's part of the chess match of coordinator versus coordinator, whether you get it right or not. But we try to make sure that our guys understand that, hey, in this pass coverage, hey, you are thinking run first, read run first. If you don't see run, drop back on pass. That type of mentality. So our guys aren't in conflict. But each and every single coverage that you have, we have stress points. I mean, that's the challenging part about it. I always like saying we run a Tampa 2 defense. I mean, the Mike linebacker, he's a stress point. his ability to be able to turn and open up and get down the field is a stress point. Mm-hmm. The corner, that's not a stress point. It's one of the few times that they get to sit around and beat somebody up. That's good for them. But then we can turn it around and flip it around and just play a simple quarters look out of the same look. And now the corners are going to have a much more higher stress point. Safety is going to have a much higher stress point. Linebackers, they get a down off, if you would. They get to play the run. They get to be more aggressive. And so that's why we try to utilize so many different coverages to take those stress points off of every player, not just to live in one. Obviously the benefit is to try to confuse the quarterback, but it's also the benefit to us to be able to take those pressure points off those guys, so guys feel like they can just go play and not have that extra stress all the time. So
I've heard that strategy quite a bit lately as far as facing the RPO teams, is constantly changing up the coverages and not letting that quarterback get that same read over and over again. I think the key to being complex to an opponent, whether that's on offense or defense, really boils down to your ability to be simple in how you teach it. So when you're putting seven coverages out there, that you find, those learning cues for the players, that you find ways to simplify it for them so that they're not out there hesitating and playing slow, that they still have that ability to play fast. So structurally, how do you put that together for them so they're able to, again, be complex to the offense, but for them it feels simple?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the biggest challenge. We come out, I'll be honest with you, we don't try to make things real complicated. If you're a hook dropper, you know exactly what to do. You know exactly your run fit is built into that, your pass coverage, who you're working towards, what part of the field, that type of mentality, all dropped in there. Everything's built into that. Curl drops, same thing. Flat drops. We have a curl flat drop. Safeties, you know, we have times where safeties, they'll have to know what a hook drop is. They will have to know what a curl flat drop is. The great part is we can do that here this spring. That's one of the things, beauty of spring ball with no pads. Hey, you know, Indy time, what do you do during Indy time? Well, hey, we'll sit out there and we'll practice curl flat drops. I mean, the whole back seven, because everybody at some point in time is probably going to need to know exactly what a curl flat drop is and how to react to it and how to play it and make sure that they understand the rules that go along with it. You know, hey, do you know your run fits? Do you know exactly what you're doing on the option? Do you know this? They are all built into that curl flat drop. And that's how we had to kind of build this defense, is around those structures that way. So guys could be able to do multiple jobs and multiple tasks, and to make it simple enough where the heat of the pressure and the heat of the moment and the pressure that comes with that will not make them wither or play slow. And sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't. But, you know, sometimes you have to hone back in, and some games, you know, guys are seeing too much and they're not reacting as well, and you got to limit the amount that you're doing. But sometimes, hey, it's nice being able to go out there and be able to execute all the different looks and things that these guys will see. And we try to do as much carryover between different coverages as humanly possible. More times than not, most of our coverages, there's probably, you know, 2 to 3 tweaks. I like calling it that way, where 2 or 3 guys maybe are doing something different, and that's it. And usually by the time you get to coverage 4, after like day 4 of install, you know, like during fall camp, after day 4, you're just mixing and matching things. You know, it's like, well, I'm going to take a curl drop here and a hook drop here and, you know, this person here, and we'll piece them all together and see what we come up with. That type of mentality allows those guys to be very successful. But yes, it does. That's the beauty of spring practice here, you know, being able to work all those different techniques, those different drops, and be able to make sure that everybody in the back seven has a clear understanding of what they need to do. That's fun. That's enjoyable. And that's what really makes this defense roll, to be honest with you.
Coach, if you could maybe talk us through a drill progression for one of those drops. I know you mentioned the hook and the curl flat, but one of those, and you mentioned that, you know, everything has a run fit tied to it as well. So how do you drill that, the technique you need, along with not just, okay, I'm going to drop to the hook and we're going to work on where that is. I think most coaches go beyond just that initial install type of drill to working all the decisions that these guys have to make. So what's your drill progression look like for, you know, I mean, pick your drop, curl flat, hook, whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, give you an example on the curl flat. Okay. Curl flat, 2 things. One, we teach it in terms of understand your base knowledge that you are staying in the curl until something takes you to the flat. You always drop off the number 2 receiver, and we count from the outside in. So those outside, there's 2 ones, there's 2 twos, and then there's a 3, regardless of where he's at. So again, they can start counting people. They start knowing exactly where they are. Then they start looking at the position. Is the guy on a running back? If the guy's a running back, I'm staying in the box. I stay in the curl unless he expands me. The other thing is, again, I skipped a step because I've got to tell you about the run progression. Anytime that you have the flat drop, anytime that goes in, you are a force player, meaning you have to turn everything back into your teammates. He does not get to run any farther to the sidelines. The only way that he can go to the sidelines is if you get cracked from number one. So now he knows his run fit. The other thing is an option. If you are the flat defender, you are also the pitch defender, meaning if option comes your way, you get to the line of scrimmage as quickly as possible, you work to the sidelines. So now we start working different scenarios. We can start working running back, a tailback, back in the backfield. He's number two, all right? How do I want to come down? Or if I'm already in the box, how do I play it? If the guy is a tight end, now you work a tight end. Now, how do I come down? Well, obviously, you got to protect yourself more. You got to make sure that your outside leverage, you get outside of him so that you can turn everything back in. excuse me. Now, how does it change? Well, okay, now there's two receivers out there. How do I work this? Well, now I slightly come down, head up on him. Now I make sure that I'm coming inside because I'm really not worried about a run threat out there. I'm not worried about that. Now, if there's three receivers out there, now we come down differently. So what we end up doing is a lot of times you just work those different scenarios. You work those different spots. And again, it won't matter if it's a safety coming down on a blitz or if a safety is coming down to be a three part of a three deep, or if it's a linebacker that has to kind of adjust his alignment and know exactly where he needs to be. But his key reads all still the same. You know, the great part for us is when we talk about a curl flat drop, you're always working off of number two, but guess what? That's always your key read too. Your key read hasn't changed. He will tell you what your job is and what you're expected to do. So the drill progression will go from, hey, we will work the guys in a running back spot, the guys at a tight end spot. There's two receivers out there. There's three receivers out there. How we work those different spots and situations, just getting key reads off of them and making sure that they know them. That's it.
Coach, I appreciate you sharing that detail with us and all the things you've shared here today on the podcast. I'd like to finish up always with one question. As you look at everything you do as a coach to get your guys and prepare your guys, what would be the one thing you do as a coach that really gives them the winning edge?
I think the one thing that really kind of maybe gives them the winning edge is just flat out knowing how much that I work hard to develop my relationships with these guys and knowing how much that I care for them and how much that I want them to be successful. And I think in everything that I do, they can see the fact that I'm working for them each and every single day to help them become the best that they can be. And just more importantly, how I can help them become better on everything that they do, from in life to football. I think that carries more weight than anything else I ever do. I mean, you know, I've got the nickname around here, Wizard. They think I'm a genius for some reason. I don't know why, but with that is not what's important to me. What's important to me is the relationships and the people. So what gives me the winning edge, honestly, I believe, is the rapport that I have with the guys and the fact that we're able to work together to see a common end. And I just truly believe that that's the basis for everything. So,
Coach, I appreciate you taking the time today. And certainly would love to have you back again. Enjoy this conversation. So thank you and good luck to you guys in 2019.
Thanks, Bruce and Keith. You have yourself a great day, and anytime, man. I love talking ball, so it's always great for me.
Some great detail there from Coach Kelling as he shared some of the things that they do in practice. We will have some diagrams of his curl flat drill, and so you can see the different variations. We also want to direct you to footballdevelopment.com. Coach talked quite a bit about the Hawk Tackle, and we have that available in our free shoulder tackle system, all the drills that go along with it. And I also encourage you to check out our advanced tackling system. It's been eye-opening for coaches, especially what we teach and some of the evaluation of film, things you can work on right now in the spring to get your team better. Check that out at footballdevelopment.com. Follow us on our Twitter account for football coaches at FBDEV. coach. And if you're enjoying the podcast, please head over to iTunes, give us a 5-star, or leave some time to leave a review. We appreciate it, and it helps the podcast.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.